Comptroller Susana Mendoza is joining us this morning. Susana, first off, it's good to speak with you again. I have to admit, you know, to a certain extent here, that you and I probably met in the campaign before 2016. You went into office 2016, but you and I think, met more accurately $16.4 billion ago.
That's exactly right, my friend. Oh, my goodness. What a difference, you know, over this last, you know, I guess 5.5 years now. I'm so excited to finally have good news. I know that you were just talking about the forecast for the weather being kind of crummy, but I can tell you that financially our forecast is looking much brighter.
You know, $16.4 billion, I've always been curious about I've read a lot of the press releases, and I listen for a tone. And I've gotten the idea that you've had to put considerable effort into being able to keep in the forefront of legislators and the governor's office and others to achieve these goals, that something has to be done. Was this done through a bully pulpit? Because I get the idea that you've always made a point saying, look, we have to achieve these goals. We have to achieve financial solvency. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't know that I would say it bully, because I don't feel like my style has been to bully people. It has been, though, to be a loud voice of advocacy and, you know, financial restraint, right? So I do have a platform that I think I've leveraged, you know, as well as anybody could possibly hope to. And I've tried to educate the legislators, too, as to, you know, what we were going through, what I had to do to manage us through it. And every time we've had some glimmer of success and, you know, some light between the trees, I really amplified that message, because it keeps you going, right? It says we're doing things right. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Let's not make the mistakes of the past. Let's chart a new path forward. And that's what we've been doing. And so I guess you could call it a bully pulpit, but I feel like it's really leveraging the platform that the voters gave me when they elected me to speak the truth about the need to be, you know, fiscally solvent and fiscally responsible.
I don't think you're a bully either, but I know you're very, very, very persistent.
I wear them down. They just don't want to hear me anymore, so they just do the right thing, which is great. I'll take whatever.
And you know what? As I've gotten a little bit older, I find that I don't care how I win, you know, as long as I can win. Yeah, that's not important to me. You know, yeah, I can move forward. Because, I mean, you've come to the point, and it's hard to think about this because you get so used to being bad news and uncomfortable, that you just accept it as part of the landscape. And, you know, and so when we do that, it's even harder for people like you to say, hey, look, you know, we got a real issue here, ladies and gentlemen. We have to work towards these goals because the voters don't trust us with a buck. And your role, I think, is more significant when you look at it, is the trust between state and the citizenry if you don't take care of the bills, because we're paying a lot of money for you to do it.
100%. Look, let me just be crystal clear that, you know, I do believe I've done a magnificent job of managing taxpayer dollars. But those are the key words right there, taxpayer dollars. It's not my money. I got elected to manage all of your money. And I hope I've made people proud. And I do know that just by the definition, you know, politicians, we don't garner a lot of trust or support, and oftentimes we've earned that reputation. But I've worked very hard, and you know I have, Tom.
Yep.
From even before I got elected, you have interviewed me, and you heard what I wanted to do for the state. And I hope that even if it's just, you know, through this controller's office, that I've done a good job of hopefully earning a glimmer of trust and hope from the voters, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or anywhere in between. It's their money that I have the privilege and the responsibility of managing, and I really feel that I've done a great job, and I hope that when I talk about the success of our state, that taxpayers can understand this is great for them. It's not about what's great for me. It's about the work that I've done that ultimately will save taxpayer money down the road, currently is doing that, and to think that we can now say that we no longer have a bill backlog.
Well,
it is an accounts payable.
I was wondering about that, Susana, because I kept thinking there's the equivalent of a cuss jar in your office. And anytime somebody says general funds backlog, they have put a dollar in.
Yeah, I know. It's like a bad word. That's so funny that you said that. I've done a few interviews now where whenever they mention the word, I'm like, hey, that's a bad word. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Right.
Yeah, we have an accounts payable. That just means it's the normal cost of running business. My oldest bill today is only 15 days old. That's better than the private sector, Tom. mean, private sector, you're in good shape if you're doing net 45 to 60 days. And we're paying 15 days today is my oldest bill. So, and by the way, you know, I do want to take a minute here to say this success did not happen because of the federal stimulus bill. In fact, I've had a bill backlog under, or I should say, I don't want to say that word anymore, a payment cycle, actually. You know how fast we pay vendors? That has been well under 30 days since June 30th of last year. So we started the fiscal year at under 30-day payment cycle. I still kept calling it a backlog because I hadn't finished paying down all of the interfund borrowing. But do you remember I did a show with you where I said that little asterisk that's above the number
right.
of what we owe? I'm going to erase that asterisk. And one of these days we're going to talk about that. Well, that asterisk of how much money we still owe on short-term debt has been erased. And I erased it a few months early. It wasn't supposed to be paid down until June 30th. But, hey, the sooner the better as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. So we had gotten our two credit upgrades in the middle of a global pandemic. And we had I had paid down the bill backlog to well under 30 days months before receiving a penny of the federal stimulus fund. So when you hear people out there say that Mendoza got this done because she got a boatload of money from the Fed, that's just simply not true. It had already been paid down a year ago. I just kept calling it bill backlog because I hadn't finished paying off those short-term loans. But those are gone, so now it's officially an accounts payable.
I've got some miscellaneous stuff I want to hit you with real quick because I think it's important, but it's being ignored. One, you are petitioning, for lack of a better word, for legislators to create an automatic deposit into the rainy day fund.
Yep. Woohoo! We need to do this, by the way. The governor this year, thankfully, is committing to put $600 million into the rainy day fund this year and $200 million next year. I really hope that the legislature, as they finalize the budget, adheres to that number. That is critically important. But I want to make sure that the state is protected, regardless of whoever the governor is. It shouldn't be just a willy-nilly, oh, this year we're going to save some money in the rainy day fund. It should be law that whenever our accounts payable is under $3 billion by the end of the fiscal year, that we would automatically deposit $200 million more or less. It would be 1% of whatever the budget is. But let's assume it's $40 billion. It'd be $200 million in the rainy day fund. And on top of that, Tom, I want to put $200 million automatically into the pension stabilization fund. And that will help our shore up our pensions over time. And so the goal for me would be, whenever we meet this target of, you know, having our bills paid quickly, we're under $3 billion for an accounts payable, we would automatically deposit $200 million into the rainy day fund until we hit a target of 7.5%. And then instead of paying $200 million into rainy day and $200 into pension, we'd go all $400 into pension stabilization. And that would really help us, move forward significantly when we talk about how we can be more responsible when it comes to our pension.
All right. Now, there's another portion, and I never saw this. I was unaware of it. The college savings program was nearly insolvent. I mean, I read this multiple press releases. It wasn't included in yours, but it was included in the governor's, and that need for the $230 million, that program was that close to being broke?
Yeah, 100%. And if it's not for the governor putting the money that he's putting towards it, we would continue to have this program that is essentially insolvent. So that was wonderful that Governor Pritzker is also, I think it was $125 million towards that. And he's also, beyond that College Illinois program, he is putting $898 million towards the employee
health insurance
health fund stuff, right? Yeah, I'm having a brain cramp here. But the health insurance. And so those were the oldest bills that had not been paid yet, and they're all going to get paid off now because of the group health insurance that was unappropriated for, so there's no way I could pay for bills that I didn't have legal appropriation on. But this year, the governor has proposed paying the entirety of it off, and that is wonderful news, music to my ears. Most importantly, it'll be music to the ears of the state employees who had to pay out of pocket for so many years for health care because the state hadn't been paying its bills during the budget impasse.
And causing a lot of discomfort. So we're going to talk about the unemployment trust fund in a moment. So wipe that off the board because I don't know about you, but I write down goals. I have specific goals, you know, that I always keep on my mind to achieve this thing. So now that you've got this unsayable general bills backlog paid.
Yeah, don't even say
backlog
it.
Paid, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's being tortured there. What's your goal next? What's next? Is it pensions and $129 billion?
Well, it's like I said, I just kind of explained what the goal is. It's putting money into the rainy day fund and into the pension stabilization fund.
Okay.
Look, the $500 million that the governor's proposing to put above and beyond the statutorily required minimums on pensions, that is the right approach. That $500 million, if the legislature approves it, that is going to save $1.8 billion on the back end of pensions. Every time we put more money into and above into the pensions above the statutorily required minimums, it's like adding another payment to your mortgage. And people at home understand that, right? You pay more into your mortgage, you pay your mortgage down quicker. You get it, you know, paid off sooner. And so that's what we want to do with, certainly what I want to do with pensions. And I think clearly what the governor is intending to do with this additional $500 million payment over this year and next. So that's the first time a governor has put more money into pensions than just the minimum payments, kind of like a minimum on a credit card, for over 30 years. So this is a big development. It's a very good use of increased revenues in the state of Illinois. Rather than seek to, like, spend the money on new things, we need to shore up our debts. And so, you know, we can talk about doing it all day long, or we can actually get to work on doing it, which is what we're doing by putting more money into the fund.
Okay, now, there's another thing that I keep waiting for somebody to cover this. I watch you on social media. You're in Washington, D.C. You're talking about an interest waiver for the unemployment trust fund. Are you getting any traction? I know you've met with Duckworth. I know you've met with Durbin. I assume you've met with a great many others, judging from your social media account.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm meeting with a few more congresspeople today, hopefully with even Republican Congressman Davis tomorrow. That's the goal. And so I saw him last night, and I told him, hey, I need to talk to you. Let's get together. So really, it's wonderful that Senator Durbin has now introduced legislation, as has Congressman Danny Davis, that would extend the waiver on when we have to pay back the unemployment insurance fund so that we don't have to pay interest while we figure out how to do that. And we're close, right? The legislature just approved $2.7 billion out of the ARPA money to go towards that effort. And business and labor and the governor's office are negotiating how the rest of it's going to get paid. But essentially, the goal here is that the deadline for when we had to start paying interest if we hadn't paid back the principal yet was last September 6th. It was an arbitrary deadline that was selected by, you know, someone in government, just assuming that the pandemic would be over by then. But clearly it wasn't over by then. We hadn't even peaked yet with Omicron. So, you know, for us to be able to, you know, do all the amazing things we've done, it's taken a lot of work. And that $4.5 billion payment took some time to negotiate what the final arrangement would be for paying it down. But long story short, if that waiver does not get extended, Illinois could be on the hook for up to $100 million in interest payments because of some arbitrary date. And so I've led the effort to put together seven other states who are in similar positions as Illinois, and we now have legislation at the federal level that could hopefully extend the waiver, and so I'm working it really hard. You're the one who said perseverance is a big deal, and I'm going to keep insisting until something happens.
I need a definitive answer on this, okay?
Yep.
Interest. All right. We still owe, all right, because we've only paid half, about the $4 billion. The interest there, and I talked to Andy Menar about this, he told me point blank, it's to encourage debate on getting this solved, right? Because everybody has to take a bump. The businesses have to pay more, and the unemployed get smaller benefits. For that speed bump not to kick in, how much has to be paid? Is it all of it? Is it a percentage? Is it half? Is it?
All of it has to be paid. So
zero,
that's all four
right.
and a half.
It's a zero-sum game then. It all has to be paid back.
Yep, all of it has to be paid back. And if the good thing about the legislation I'm trying to pursue is that if it passes, it would make the interest retroactive, the waiver retroactive. So
okay.
Illinois right now is on the hook for $42 million of interest. I'd like to be on the hook for zero. And let's also remember, this is not an irresponsible ask. Illinois is a donor state. Dutifully has been a donor state. And the 5 years prior to the pandemic, Tom, Illinois had sent back $21 billion in federal taxes. that I would argue we could have really used here in our own home state. But instead, that money went to prop up the economies of places like Kentucky and Arkansas and Alabama and Georgia. And frankly, with all due respect, all we're asking for is, look, we're going to pay this money back. There's no doubt. Just don't charge us an extra $100 million when we're one of the states that never gets our fair share back of federal taxes, right?
You know, the last time I read that, Susanna, I think, as you said, we were fifth or fourth. I think, actually, we fell from fourth to fifth as a donor state, meaning more is sent to D.C. than returned to the state, respectively. And when it came to that return, we were like in the bottom 10.
Yeah, and it's very depressing, right? And so that's what I think your average taxpayer doesn't know. They ask all the time, well, where does all our money go? Well, you know what? A lot of it goes to other red states who then turn around and pretend that they're fiscally solvent and say Illinois is a deadbeat, when in fact we're sending billions of dollars more. So let's say for every dollar in federal taxes that we charge people, right? You have to pay taxes. We only get a tiny percentage of that we get to keep. $21 billion, $4 billion a year, more or less, went back to other states that got spread out to help other struggling states. But they all act like they're not struggling, and I don't mind helping other states, but it'd be nice if they said thank you. And at the very least, don't charge us this interest on money that we're already very generous to other states with, when we know we're going to pay it back because there was some arbitrary date that said September 6th of 2021, COVID will likely be gone by then, and it wasn't. So we're still struggling to, you know, make ends meet in certain aspects. We're not out of the woods entirely. And every time I can save taxpayers, even a dollar of interest, I'm going to do my best to try to do so.
All right, here's an interesting listener's question. They were listening to us talk about the rainy day fund, and they say, mm-hmm. I wish they would include their name here. It's a good question. It says, a law for a rainy day fund? What good is that? It's in our state constitution that we have a balanced budget, and yet that gets ignored. I understand where this person's coming from.
Well, I do too, right? Which is why I'm working so hard to try to restore trust. But I would say absolutely you should want a law for a rainy day fund, because let's explain why rainy day funds are so important. During the budget impasse, right, there was no rainy day fund. When the pandemic hit, there was no rainy day fund. I had $60,000 in a rainy day fund. That's not enough to cover 30 seconds worth of government operations. So when people say, well, why was Illinois the only state in the nation to borrow, have to go to the market or go to the federal government for help? It's because we had no rainy day fund in the middle of a crisis. And so if you don't make the legislature or government have to save on your behalf, they're just not going to do it. It's too easy to look at, you know, let's say $500 million. And say, well, there's a lot of things we'd like to spend that on. Let's not put it in the rainy day fund. And so I think we have to mandate responsible behavior. And once we pass that and it's law, then, you know, the government, you at least know that $200 million is going to go towards rainy day and $200 million is going to go towards pensions. And this is a responsible approach to finances, to managing finances. And remember, it's not my money. It's your money. You should want me as controller to advocate to protect your money. And then, God forbid, there were another economic collapse through no fault of our own state. You know, we had the market collapse of 2008. There was 9/11 that tanked economies across the country. If something horrible like that happened and our economy took a hit, well, wouldn't it be nice to know we have $2 or $3 billion in a rainy day fund, and I wouldn't have to go to the market and borrow money to just make ends meet, which costs us. When I say us, I mean all taxpayers. It costs you money for us to go to the market to borrow money. So much better to have our own emergency fund like people do in their own homes that we can tap into in case of an emergency and then replenish it as soon as we have better times. That's the idea, and I think we should codify it into law.
Before I let you go, tick-tock, tick-tock, the budget is due. They've got an early end of the session. It's Friday. How close are you watching this? I mean, when they're saying this is how much money you have to pay the bills, I'm assuming pretty closely.
Oh, you better believe it. Yeah, I mean, it's like anything moves, we're like, oh, what happened? So, yes, no, of course. I mean, that's my job, too, to be very up to speed on what's happening with our budget, because that's going to determine the fate of the bill backlog. So we don't have a bill backlog now. If we pass unbalanced budgets, guess what? That certainly doesn't help to keep an accounts payable thriving instead of a bill backlog rearing its head. So I've always said that the bill backlog is dependent on passing balanced budgets, or the lack of a bill backlog is dependent on passing balanced budgets. But I do believe this budget is a really good budget for us. And if it passes anywhere near what Governor Pritzker proposed, it's actually a really good thing for Illinois because, like I said, putting $500 million more into pension stabilization fund for the first time in 30 years, that's great news for taxpayers. Putting $800 million, $600 this year and $200 next year in the rainy day fund, that's great news for taxpayers. And paying off College Illinois, that's great news for parents who had invested in that program. And paying down the entirety of what's owed in group health insurance, well, that's wonderful news for any employee who had to wait to get paid for their reimbursements, you know, for health care. So there's so many good things in this budget. I just hope that the legislature doesn't get a little bit too overeager and aggressive on what they want to do with extra money. And we should do the responsible thing of paying down our debts, and then we should save as much as humanly possible moving forward.
Controller Susana Mendoza, I took a lot of your time today, but I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's always wonderful to speak with you and to, you know, hopefully, you know, folks are listening and saying, I know it's hard to believe that there's good news coming out of Illinois with our finances, but if you don't believe me, you should believe the credit rating agencies, who clearly would not be upgrading our credit if this stuff wasn't true.
843.